Off-season week number two of the Horse and Round podcast. Andrew Mason, Andy Lindahl of Orange and Blue 760. Having a little lunch, talking a little football, having a good time. Good company as always, my friend.
Hanging out at Bill's, Big Bill's New York Pizza.
Oh, yeah. Great
Holly,
spot.
Holly, County Line. Come check them out.
Yeah, we are actually
we like our guy.
In the shadow of the Randy Gratishar autographed picture here. On the wall. Actually, not an autographed picture. It's an autographed reproduction
it's a
painting, of a
painting. Right?
That's got to be in Leroy Neiman. Based on the style of that. That looks like a Leroy Neiman.
I'm going to trust you. I can't see an artist name there. Although we have the wrong Manning bias.
Eli.
Not Peyton.
The New York Daily News front pages of Eli Manning's World Championships are also framed by us. And also we can look across, see a bunch of jerseys. I see a Derek Jeter, Mariano Rivera.
Well, Bill was over there too. I don't see Bill anymore. He must have gone back in the office.
Oh, well.
Have you met Bill?
I've never met Bill.
All right, we'll have to fix that when we're done.
Yeah, anyway, so good pizza, good times, and here we are a week and a half into the off season. A week from now, I'll be actually watching Shrine Game practices.
Okay, now wait a minute. Let's break down the outfit.
Oh.
What are we going out to practices with? Are we going to be out there? Are you going to be looking like Little Ditka? Are you going to give me the scout look with the glasses and the pasty white legs and maybe the socks up a little too high? What are we going to do?
You know, if the socks up too high, that would be a good St. Petersburg look because we're going to St. Petersburg, Florida. And if I did that, I'd have to have, like, the ridiculous Aloha shirt, perhaps.
Yes, yeah. You know, Tommy Bahama.
No, St.
Too classy.
St. Petersburg isn't that stylish, historically speaking. You know, St. Petersburg, of course, used to have the green benches. People would make fun of them for that. You know, they used to say that St. Petersburg was God's waiting room. And before anyone from St. Pete starts, you know, yelling at me, I went to St. Petersburg High School, okay? This is my turf here. And actually...
You're allowed.
Yes. I can make fun here. This is my old territory. And in fact, St. Petersburg High School, Stewart Field, my alma mater, is one of the hosts of practices for the Shrine Game next week.
Really?
Yes.
Are you going to walk around? Are you expected to be recognized as an esteemed alumni? Is it going to be Andrew Mason Field by the time we're all said and done?
Probably not, because the former governor of Florida, now a congressman, Charlie Crist, is a St. Petersburg High alumnus, so he's probably got some credibility on me there. So,
I see. Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah, anyway. So they don't really care that I'm coming back, but it'll be cool.
Well, maybe I ought to alert them. Let them know. Hey, do you know who I am? Especially if you get that look going, it says important guy here.
If I ever played that card, next week would be the week to do it.
Well, I'm telling you, maybe you ought to. I want you to try to just drop it one time.
Don't you know who I am? I went here.
Comfortably. Just, you know, slip it into casual conversation. None of the school people actually be there, though, right? I mean, how's that going to work?
Well, the field is kind of separate from the rest of the school.
But aren't classes back in session?
Yes.
So will kids go over there and watch Senior Bowl practices?
Or Shrine Game practices?
Or Shrine, whatever we're doing, whatever game this is?
Yeah. Maybe. I don't know. I'm about to find out. Believe it or not, I've never gone to the Shrine Game because a big part of the reason why is usually the Broncos have made deeper advances in the playoffs in recent years. They've gone to the divisional playoff round or the conference championship game. So I've been back here in Denver either covering the end of a season or covering an advance to a conference championship game or beyond. So a little unusual, but it's also a testament to how much is in front of the Broncos and how important it is to hit on this draft. And, you know, it's not just hitting on the first round or two, it's all the way through. And the Shrine Game prospects, you're talking kind of round three and beyond. Those picks are going to be important as well. Broncos have found some guys. Steve Atwater is going with me. And actually, Steve Atwater is a member of the East-West Shrine Game Hall of Fame.
Why not? He needs to be a member of a different Hall of Fame. But anyway, whatever.
Does,
we won't go into that right now.
But we can call him Hall of Famer Steve Atwater, at least next week.
Get him warmed up for it. Get him used to it.
Yeah.
You know, I like that. This is going to be interesting. You and I haven't had a chance to really do the podcast because, truth be told, and people have probably heard it on my other podcast, I have been struggling with whatever this cold has been. I couldn't get my voice back to save my life. So I haven't had a chance to ask you this since the end of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Let's be honest about it. When they were losing, we just wanted the losing to end. But now that we're in draft season and you're sitting at five, honestly, how relieved are you they did not go screwing around and winning that Kansas City game? We sit at Big Bill's Pizza. There's another great little spot at the other end of this strip mall called the Sunset Grill.
Yes.
And I'm sorry. You know, I will admit, I have a camera. I'm down on the field to take pictures for a myriad of reasons. Mm-hmm. But I have a camera that's not as fancy as yours. And I think you'll attest, when it gets below 30 degrees, it doesn't flash as quickly as it would. So it
the
was
motor
too,
slows down, yes.
Yeah, it was too cold to take pictures, and I had no other reason to be there. So I decided, you know what? This is the one home game I can go watch with some buddies.
You
I
came bailed.
Down to, I bailed. Ugh. I came down to the Sunset, and as they got going, I was like, okay, please don't win this game. Please don't knock us out of the number five pick. I know we talked all of December about needing to break the streak, and you did. But I'm not going to lie to you. Once you broke the streak, I was like, you know, let's not go winning too many of these. Wasn't there a part of you feeling that way?
I wanted them to be competitive.
Yes. I didn't want blowouts.
And they fought back in that last game. But now that you're sitting there at number five, and also that took you out of the 6-10 tiebreaker, because here's what happens. You pick fifth in that first round, but then you pick behind the other 5-11 teams in the next round, because they shuffle it around every round among the teams that have the same record. So you're not simply picking fifth every round. So it's for your draft position, it's better to be in that cluster of 5-11 teams than that cluster of 6-10 teams. I mean, obviously, look, the players, they don't want to lose. They've got to go all out, and certainly they did.
And we saw that.
Yes. The guys that were in there in that game in Week 17, and look, it was a lot of players that weren't very familiar to Broncos fans, especially in the secondary. You didn't see much of Aqib Talib, Chris Harris Jr., Darian Stewart that game. It was a lot of, you know, Jamal Carter, Diamante Thomas, Marcus Rios, Brendan Langley, et cetera. The guys that were out there played their tails off.
Yeah, they don't give a hoot about draft position.
Exactly.
Because that's a player coming to take their job.
Exactly. They're trying to show that they belong and can succeed in this league. But at the same time, you're sitting there right now at number five. And let's face it, there's a different horizon of possibilities open at five than at nine. You're not unhappy picking at five. I mean, you're unhappy about the circumstances that got you there over the course of the season. But the other thing now, because you picked five, you're coaching in the Senior Bowl, which is a potentially huge advantage if you take advantage of this. Not everyone has maximized this opportunity. But you can go back through the last, you know, dozen plus years or so of the NFL, and you can see some teams. I love to point out the 04 Chargers that went down to the Senior Bowl and found Sean Phillips, Nick Hardwick, and Philip Rivers. Some teams that have gone down there have had some productive, if not transformative, drafts based on what they were able to learn by coaching and watching players up close in the Senior Bowl. It's a huge opportunity for the Broncos, especially when they're looking at having a cluster of picks and potentially another one added if they get a compensatory third rounder for Russell Okung in the first 125 selections. They have some significant opportunities here, and if they can use the intel they get from the Senior Bowl properly and give themselves an advantage, they could be in good shape to have a big, big draft starting with that fifth pick.
Okay, so I'm going to throw this at you because I'm not going to tell you I love either guy. I'm not even going to tell you I know a ton about either guy.
Mm-hmm.
Two guys are going to get a chance to look at Baker Mayfield and also Josh Allen, who have already been part of discussions here. And there's a myriad of – there's eight quarterbacks total. They could find a number of guys. Washington State kid's going to be there.
Luke Falk.
I believe Mason Rudolph's going to be there, yes.
Oklahoma State,
so you've got a lot of intriguing prospects.
Some sleepers, too. You start getting to like a Mike White of Western Kentucky, a Kyle Laletta out of Richmond, who I wrote about on DenverBroncos.com this week. There's plenty of guys to watch.
So, but I'm going to narrow it down to two that have been very popular discussions on Orange and Blue 760, where you and I both do radio shows.
Clear first-round picks in Allen and Mayfield.
For me, let's say they fall in love with Baker Mayfield. I'm going to take Mayfield. Allen is an interesting prospect, but I don't know that many feel he's top 10 worthy just yet. Maybe he changes the narrative during the workouts and all that other stuff, But for the most part, the general feeling I get on Allen is people don't – he may be the fourth quarterback in the class, but he's not a guy that people are going to throw a fifth-round pick at or the fifth number five pick at right away. So let's go with Baker Mayfield. Here's what I find interesting about Baker Mayfield. If the Broncos were to fall in love with him, is there a chance they're going to have to trade up? Because now all of a sudden, as you watch the way this has fallen, we're seeing how you've got – you're making a funny look at me, but look, no, there's rumors that the Colts may want one because they don't know what's going on with Andrew Luck. I'd be a little shocked by that.
I'm thinking about the Jets maybe jumping up too.
And now there's word the Ravens may want to jump up. I mean, here's the thing. Even if you get all the boxes checked and Baker Mayfield becomes the guy for this staff, are you sure at five you're high enough for him anymore in your mind?
You may not be. And that's the thing. If you decide that one of these quarterbacks in this draft class – that he's your guy, and you have to have him, you have to be prepared to move up a bit and make that deal. Hey, John Leyba, Denver Post.
Yeah, giving us, a wave.
Saying hello.
He's got a few spots around here we could go.
Well, he knows everything.
Yeah, he does. Hey, he's a local guy. Yes. And, hey, we talked about photographers and pictures. I mean, get some of the best shots game day, period.
Yes,
so,
absolutely.
Anyway, you were saying you do have to be ready to make that move, make that jump. How high do you think they have to go? They have to be prepared to try to jump to three? What's safe if you want, say, Baker Mayfield?
Two.
Well, let me throw this at you. I've kind of hijacked your
or
podcast
three, maybe.
Here.
No, it's
but
fine.
I've got to get your opinion.
It gets hijacked every week. It's cool.
It's well, I'm just kind of asking you the question.
It's our podcast,
kind of
not
role.
Mine. It's ours.
Let me throw this at you. I thought this was incredibly fascinating, and I don't know if you had a chance to hear it because we got it on so late. Now, we replayed the clip that I'm about to mention to you the other day, so maybe that's where you caught it. But we had on Glenn Parker, an old buddy of Stouts from his Buffalo Bills days, mm-hmm. and Parker does analyst work for the Pac-12 Network.
Right.
And I asked him, which of the two California QBs, the UCLA's Josh Rosen or USC's Sam Darnold, would you want? And he kind of went, do I have to have one of them? He goes, I don't want either of them. He didn't want either one of them, and you just raised your eyebrows. I mean, is there not – do you not feel like – I understand when it comes to the measurables.
All of these guys have warts. That's the thing. Remember when Andrew Luck came out in 2012? It was –
there was a no doubt.
Slam dunk. The moment the Colts wrapped up having that number one overall pick, you knew that once they made the move to move on from Peyton Manning, that's where they were going.
He was the guy.
That was it. Lock, stock, and barrel. No doubt. Even with, you know, RG3 sitting there in that draft class, it was a quite. Yeah, then it became a question of who's number two because you knew Andrew Luck was number one. All of these guys, you can point to something that is a potential knock on them. With Sam Darnold, you question how he does under pass rush, and you can pick apart maybe his release and delivery a little bit. With Josh Rosen, there's, you know, whispers about, you know, what kind of teammate he is, how coachable he is. I think some of them may be bunk, you know, because it's largely due to interpretation. But you do hear these things. With Baker Mayfield, you mentioned the height. There's also, you know, you also look at the offense from Oklahoma that he ran. He's going to have to make a transition to running a pro-style offense in terms of the types of throws that he makes. Now, Baker Mayfield does a lot of the things you want your quarterback in the NFL to do. Studies well. He knows how to make plays that take advantage of the looks the defense gives you. He knows how to look off a safety very well. So those are check marks for him in the positive. But he's going to have to make an adjustment schematically. Josh Allen, he's got a big jump coming from the Mountain West. And accuracy, he has not hit that 60% threshold on a consistent basis season by season. So he's going to have to improve there. All of these guys. And we haven't even discussed Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
Who certainly wildly productive, but does he have the body type that will hold up when he takes off and uses the running part of the equation for him that's so crucial to him keeping a defense off balance?
Can I ask you, is he even as big as Mariota?
No.
I mean, that's my concern with him. Now, I guess in fairness.
But he's electric.
Is he more Deshaun Watson-like? Is that a better comparison?
Maybe. That's actually good. That's actually a good
comparison. Because I thought Deshaun was too small to survive. Yeah. And unfortunately, he got the knee hurt. But I don't think that was because of his size.
I will say this. I do not agree with the pundits who say, oh, Lamar Jackson is a wide receiver. No, no, no. I think he can play quarterback in the right scheme. And I think somebody is going to draft him as a quarterback. And it would not surprise me if he is a first-round quarterback. And he has a lot of potential there. But I do wonder about him standing up to a pounding. That's I don't have a question on him as a quarterback whether he's good enough. I have a question on whether he can take the hits required, and you know that may be a function of him getting in the weight room and kind of building up. That's something that could be changed with him adding 10 to 15 pounds of good functional muscle mass. But that's going to be fascinating to see with him. Because remember, coming from out of Bobby Petrino's offense at Louisville, obviously the spread type concepts don't necessarily translate, but Petrino, we know about his ill-fated stint with Atlanta, but he also was an NFL assistant before then, so he definitely was putting some pro concepts into what Lamar Jackson was doing and was getting him ready for the next level.
Yeah, I got to tell you, it's interesting because I don't know how I feel about Lamar Jackson. You don't want to pull Deshaun Watson because I think had Deshaun Watson not hurt himself, he ends up being the most electric QB and probably in the running for Rookie of the Year if he can continue it. Now, you and I both know it's long season.
But I think they're in the playoff with Deshaun Watson.
I agree with you. And that division's not nearly as interesting because I think they run away with some stuff. So you don't want to screw up that kind of quarterback, which, frankly, I didn't see that coming. I thought maybe he was overdrafted too high when Houston took him there, but they ended up being right, at least initially, and I'm wrong, and I'm fine with that. But
I liked what he did against pro-style defenses against Alabama
right
in college. That's part of what turned me on to him coming out.
And it's another reason why I'm not positive how I feel about Baker Mayfield. I have some concerns, but I love the desire to compete and the desire to win and the desire to work.
And he played very well against Georgia. Don't forget that. Georgia's defense allowed, I think, 15 points per 60 minutes, and he went out there and led Oklahoma's offense to 38 on him.
The only thing that scared me, as was pointed out to me by some of my friends that observed things, is Bulldogs put their corners up in press coverage and took away the easy underneath stuff. The complexion of that game changed, and he wasn't nearly the quarterback he was before they were doing that. Anyway, look, all these questions to be answered coming up. I mean,
he'll see some press coverage probably in Senior Bowl week.
Well,
in practices, that's what's going to be fascinating.
I'm telling you, it makes me wonder. Everybody is saying, and likely they'll be right. It probably will be a Rosen-Darnold thing, 1-2, but you never know. There's so much iffiness about this class. I mean, so Nick Hardwick, one of the guys you just mentioned, who now does the L.A. Chargers analyst stuff, so he's in L.A., and we talk to him quite often on our show because he's based in San Diego. Nick said he wouldn't follow Josh Rosen into a nightclub, much less on the football field.
Wow.
And so, as you said, not only are there questions, these aren't little questions.
And these are questions coming from out of the Pac-12 orbit.
The people around these kids.
Yes.
That's what I find interesting. That's a great point because, again, we've got Nick Hardwick, who's in L.A. and watches a lot of – now, Nick is with you. Nick loves Baker. He said, I'd take Baker, and I wouldn't worry about anything else. He thinks Baker Mayfield's the guy. So let me ask you this because we had an interesting text on our show where we had our guy Keith that I think texts us all.
Keith, we love from you, Orlando?
Keith. Yeah. Keith, I'm not sure what you do all day, but we love you. Don't ever change.
We need more people like
Keith.
Yeah,
we wish we could get our ratings meter down to you, Keith, because we'd rule the roost. But Keith had a good point where he said he'd go left tackle first round, Lamar Jackson second round, and Sony Michel third round. Now, I'm not sure, as you've just put out, maybe
I don't know if he lasts round three.
Well, it doesn't sound like you think Lamar Jackson's going to make it to two either, so there could be two wishful thinking.
You might have to go back into round one because here's why I'm starting to think more and more five quarterbacks, maybe even six in round one. I might even push it there. And why I think you might see a glut of quarterbacks in round one. First of all, the ever-present fifth-year option. If you pick a quarterback in round one and he works out, that's 5 years of cost control in that you know what you're going to pay for him contract-wise potentially. The other thing is this. There's questions about Ben Roethlisberger. Does he decide to hang them up after this year? But No matter what, Pittsburgh has to start thinking about a succession plan potentially. And is Landry Jones that succession plan? I don't know. New England, we've seen obviously the big report, the bombshell report that came out from
Seth Wickersham. We're going to talk about that next week.
Yes. When we'll record.
That became way more interesting than I expected it to.
We'll have to record this next Friday when we get back from when I get back from the Shrine game. But that's what we need to get back into that, especially depending on what happens after Titans-Patriots, because that's going to be the first game since this report came out, because we all want to see how the Patriots respond in the wake of that report. So what are the Patriots kind of had their little plan of handing from Brady to Garoppolo blown up. They don't have a young quarterback in the wings now because Garoppolo has been traded. Jacoby Brissett has been traded. Are they back in the market for a quarterback? You mentioned Baltimore. Are they looking to move on from Joe Flacco? Is Buffalo in the market for a quarterback? The Chargers, Philip Rivers is doing well. He is going into year 15, believe it or not. Year 13 is a starter, but year 15, do they start thinking about a succession plan? Was thinking about somebody else here. Arizona, what does Arizona do? Maybe they go free agent. Maybe they go draft. A lot of teams. Now, it'll flesh itself out a little bit more after free agency. But we're talking about a lot of teams that could be looking quarterback here this year with the depth of quarterbacks in this class. Well, so that idea from Keith in Orlando of waiting until the second round for a quarterback, that may not work. If you want to have a quarterback with your second pick, you may have to trade back up into the first round to pull that one off.
I'll tell you this. It's going to be fascinating. We're going to have to get into our quarterback situation, because I'll tell you what, if you're looking to move one, now you can't move Brock because he's not under contract. And I think the most tradable commodity, obviously, is Trevor with the number of starts. But there could be a market for it. I know the people of Denver, some of the fans, not all, but some of the fans have made it clear to us via their text that they're ready to move on from the whole situation as it is. You'll get a fresh-looking room. But Trevor could be trade bait with all you just laid out there.
Yeah, we got that from a poll that we did on our show, First and 10 at 10, as well, regarding Paxton Lynch. And it seems like that's the fan sentiment. But, you know, as Johnny Redker said, if you listen to the fans, you end up sitting with them.
That's a good point. Fans want free parking, right?
Thanks, Andy. And stay tuned. Matt Money Smith, play-by-play announcer for the Los Angeles Chargers. We had him on this week. Talk about where the Chargers stand. We'll go through the AFC West over the next few weeks. This week, the Chargers, obviously, a lot of interesting stuff going on there. Are they the favorite in the AFC West? Plenty of good stuff from him.
All right, welcome back to First and 10 at 10, Orange and Blue 760. Ryan Edwards, Andrew Mason, and Steve Atwater. We head out to the hotline and bring on Matt Money Smith, who, of course, is the play-by-voice for the Chargers, does a lot of great work with NFL Network, is a radio guy. I mean, this guy, to be honest, Matt, I got to be honest, I didn't think you had enough time in your day to talk anymore. I mean, the fact is, you are a busy, busy man.
Ryan, you know how it is. When you're in radio, you always want to reciprocate. So, you know, anytime I get asked, as long as it's in the window where I can do it, I'm happy. Plus, what the heck? I mean, I'm talking sports with you and Andrew and freaking Steve Atwater. My God, this is fantastic.
Well, we appreciate the time. Yeah, hey, you got to turn your mic on there, Ring of Famer.
Way to go, money.
All right, there it is.
Still learning, man. I'm just still learning. I don't know how to turn my mic on.
If I may, I do want to do what I'm guessing, at least I hope every guest that comes on with you guys does, and say for shame to the committee, because as someone who's 44 years old, those freaking Orange Crush uniforms, and I will never forget, and I've got to believe it's got to be everybody's favorite Steve Atwater play, but when you wreck Christian Okoye, it tore out a little piece of my soul. Not because I'm from Kansas City, but because he was my guy on Super Tecmo Bowl.
He's a beast player. On Tecmo Bowl, boy.
Oh, yeah. So when you knocked him clean into Pueblo, it did affect me a little bit as a child.
Hey, man. Well, sorry, man. Sorry about that.
He's not sorry. He's not sorry, but yes.
I needed to do it, though.
Yeah, well,
you
you're instantly our favorite guest that's ever come on here. So we appreciate that. Again, we're talking with Matt Money Smith. All right, the Chargers. Let's start with the Chargers, and we'll kind of work out from that. They announced that Gus Bradley, Ken Wisenhunt will remain. How important was it for the Chargers to retain those guys?
Extremely, especially Gus. Not to take anything away from Coach Wisenhunt, but we knew Gus was going to be in high demand. When you got six openings across the NFL and you have someone, coaching defense, the caliber of Gus, the level of trust and admiration and just, love, I would say, that the players have for him, it was really important to keep him around, especially if you saw, I don't know how close people paid attention to the injuries that defense dealt with, but I mean, you had the quarterback of your defense and Denzel Perriman out for a good chunk of the year. You lost one of your top Pro Bowl cornerbacks and Jason Verrett. A lot of people didn't know if Trey Boston was going to be up to play that high safety, that's so important in that cover three scheme, and it all worked. You know, granted, the numbers against the run weren't great, but it was kind of bend, don't break there. And against the pass, they were as good as anybody in the league. And I thought it was really, really important to get Gus back in the fold. And it was a feeling out process for Gus, too, when he signed. They offered him a multi-year deal. He said he took 1 year because he wasn't sure how he was going to feel about the West Coast. And turns out he really loved it. And there's no doubt he was in high demand. So that the Chargers were able to bring him back is a huge bonus for that defense.
Big picture for the Chargers franchise, even though they fell short of the playoffs in the end, winning six of the last seven, do they feel like they got enough momentum to make the inroads they wanted to make in LA in year one in that market?
Yeah, Andrew, I don't know. I mean, I think there's a little bit of everything, right? We really had this thing going right, and had we got in, man, we feel like we could have done some damage. That's kind of what all the players and coaches were saying. They were convinced that they would have been able to not only hang but beat the Jaguars. It was the toughest loss of the year for them, and I think more than anything, they wanted that shot. And I do think that very well could have been a lopsided game, how well they had been playing to close the year and how motivated they were, and then to be able to carry that sort of momentum into New England. Don't know what would have been able to happen there. So I think there's that sort of lament of, man, we gave away two games, a field goal at the end of the contest against the Dolphins that was from 44 yards that should have gone through. That would have been one win and got them in, or the game against Jacksonville when you're leading by three and you get two interceptions with under 2 minutes to go and you can't get that to hold up. So I think there was a lot of sort of if onlys. Now, at the same time, Philip Rivers, who's a very emotional guy and is not afraid to hide it, did say, hey, I am excited for next year. You know, he said it's the cleanest he's been in the pocket in a few years. The offensive line, even though it was ravaged by injury, did a great job of keeping him protected. You saw what happened with Keenan Allen, fully healthy. He'll be back, obviously, even better. And Hunter Henry, even though, he missed those last couple games with the lacerated kidney, he was really making his way into that category of one of the elite tight ends in this league. So, yeah, they're certainly excited about a lot of things, even though they came up short.
Yeah, Matt. Now, Phillip Rivers coming off a good year. He didn't get started off that great, but picked it up, had a really good year. Are the Chargers interested in any of these quarterbacks coming out? I know he's going to his 15th year next year. Would they be interested in trying to take a shot at one of these young quarterbacks in, say, second, third round, you think?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, Steve, and I think – if you had asked me that after the first 4 weeks when they were 0-4,
said, absolutely.
It would have been a different answer. What happened, and Coach Lynn, and you guys know Coach Lynn real well, he admitted this. He said, look, it was my first year as a head coach, and I was just too involved, and I was too determined to make this team look exactly how I thought it should look, and I didn't listen to my coaches as much as I should have. Mm-hmm. And he made that shift. And kudos to him for recognizing that, because most head coaches are pretty proud and to some degree affected by hubris. And he was able to step back and say to Coach Wisenhunt, hey, what's going on here? What am I doing wrong? And that's when they kind of said, hey, it's got to be a Phillip offense. I know you want Melvin Gordon to be this power running back and 30 carries per game, but that's just not, we're better off letting the pass set up the run. And once they did that, that's when you saw Rivers really take off and have this Pro Bowl season. So I think because of that, he's such a big guy. He's such a sturdy guy. He didn't take many hits at all. I think he was only sacked 17 times all season. So I think maybe that shifted their thinking a little bit, and also the way they closed the season, winning those 9 of the final 12 and 6 of the last 7, thinking, you know, do we really want to invest a first-round pick of Baker Mayfield sitting there or Lamar Jackson sitting there, whoever it may be that they like that might slide that far, or are we better off, you know, getting Tremaine Edmonds from Virginia Tech because we really need a bigger linebacker to help support Denzel Perryman, and knowing that's a plug and play for a team that we think could end up making a run to the Super Bowl. So I think that's something that John Spanos and Tom Telesco in the front office are going to have to examine. You know, is it going to be best player available if it's quarterback at 17 and that guy's sitting there? Or do they look at this team and say, we've got a Hall of Fame quarterback, we've got a lights-out defense, we got to make a run next year instead of worrying about developing a guy for 3 years from now.
Chatting with Matt Money Smith here on the hotline. Find him on Twitter at Matt Money Smith. I'm interested because the Chargers came up as we were discussing the playoffs, you know, last week, and we started saying, boy, the Chargers would be like that one team that I don't think anybody wants to see in the postseason. And, you know, you get into the wormhole of expansion, if playoff expansion. I'm curious, are you pro playoff expansion, or do you like it right now as it is? What do you think?
Yeah, Ryan, I like it more limited. You know, and again, I'm probably showing my age, you know, growing up watching baseball, and it was just two teams that played in the CS, right, to go to the World Series. And it just made every regular season game that much more important. Did we need, you know, the Ravens and the Chargers both in the playoffs? Maybe. You know, I mean, I think, but then again, the Titans won, right? So the regular season's there for a reason, you know, and I think that's kind of where I come out on college as well is, yeah, it'd be nice to get that 5 and 6 team in, maybe the first two get a bye and you get to see a couple more teams, you know, maybe put Central Florida in there and that's exciting. But at the same time, man, watching those regular season games are so compelling, especially in division. You know, how, like, just think back to that, even though it didn't work out for the Broncos, but you just think back to that Monday nighter that opened the season, and we all had a feeling the AFC West was going to be super competitive, and the Broncos pull away early, Chargers rally to come back, and it ends on a blocked field goal. I mean, it just, that the impact of that game, you know, just telling you what it was like flying home at 3 in the morning, you got the sense that, okay, it's only 1 of 16, but everybody on this plane feels like, oh, man, that is not good. That is going to come back to get us. You got to win when you have those opportunities.
And speaking of that game and the kicking situation, of course, we get the report today that the Chargers are going to sign Roberto Aguayo to a reserve future contract. What are they hoping that he can bring if he's kind of fixed the issues that he's had the last couple of years?
I think they're, you know, I don't think that's the last name you're going to hear, to be honest with you. It was such a mess. I mean, that's, you know, that ultimately that's why they're not in the postseason. You know, like I said, that game against Miami, you know, if you just look statistically and quantitatively at it, 81% of the time a team is in that position at home with a 44-yard field goal to win the game, they win the game. The Chargers were in the 19% of that with that rookie, Younghoe Koo. You had issues with the kicking game with Nick Novak. You know, you think about the Dallas game, and they were able to overcome it, but he wrenches his back in the first field goal attempt, and you're going for it on 4th and 13, you know, from the Cowboys 30. So I think they're going to leave no stone unturned because they went through 5 kickers, if you include Lambeau, who was in the kicking competition with Koo at the start of training camp. And I've got a feeling they are not going to be put in that position again. And they want to make sure someone who was as talented as Aguayo was when he was at Florida State, was it a mental thing? Is it a change of scenery thing? Or is there just something not right there? I think they're willing to take a look at that, and I wouldn't be surprised if you see them actually draft the kicker. You know, whether it's Blankenship, you know, who obviously had a great year out of Georgia, or even, you know, I don't know if they would do the Papanastos thing, even though he's one of the better kickers in college football after watching what happened to him in the national championship game. But I think you'll probably see one of those draft picks used on a kicker as well.
So, Matt, we were talking a little earlier on our show about, you know, some issues in Broncos locker room just in terms of some of the veterans and the younger guys, you know, meshing, getting along, and, you know, the older guys mentoring younger guys. What's the situation like? You know, what's the situation there at the Chargers? Do you have any feel for that, whether that locker room is a cohesive locker room or it's a little bit of a generation, a little bit of a gap there?
Yeah, I'll tell you, defensively, it's a super tight unit. And I think that goes back to, you know, the conversation we were having about Gus, Steve, and how important he was in building that unit, because you do have some veteran guys. Like, I'll give you a perfect example, right? Rookie Desmond King becomes their nickelback. And, man, he and Casey Hayward, who I think is 28, they were attached at the hip. I mean, I think of it as like the Tom and Jerry cartoon, right? With the two dogs, with Little Spike and Big Spike, and right. Just kind of hopping over the top of them. Tell me more. What am I doing? You know, and it was just a young man who was trying to absorb as much as he could, you know, from a now two-time Pro Bowler and All-Pro, and Casey was happy to share with him because of how important he was. So I know defensively, it's a real tight unit. And if you think to those defensive tackles and the young guys and Damian Square and Darius Filon and how they got along with Mebane and Corey Leggett. So defensively, yes. Offensively, I do think Phillip is separated a little bit just because, you know, he's got eight kids. And he's,
eight?
You know, and,
yes.
and he's in his 15th season. So he's just got a different sort of, he's just separated, I think, from everyone because of where he's at in his life and how important his family is to him. Mm-hmm. So it was just kind of like he and Kellen Clemens, the backup quarterback. And I think the rest of the offense sort of operates. Now, look, they love Phillip and he still gets along with everybody great. But I think, you know, just imagining how a quarterback fits into a locker room, and I've got to believe that's the way it is in a lot of locker rooms. The quarterback is sort of an odd position because of that sort of CEO level that they're expected to operate on. But otherwise, wide receiver group, very tight with Keenan Allen and even young Mike Williams, who was dealing with injury all year. Running backs, Austin, I'll tell you, so I'll finish with this, making a long answer even longer. Melvin Gordon, you know, was getting pushed by Austin Ekeler there in the middle of the season when it just was not working out for Melvin. And Ekeler was ripping off carries at 5 yards per, and he's an undrafted rookie out of Western State.
Western State.
And he fumbles, and it was a huge fumble in that Jacksonville game. And the first guy walking over to him, putting his hand on him, was Melvin.
Wow.
You know, just saying, hey, shake it off. We might need you again. And I think that kind of spoke to, even though here's a young man, you know, who's trying to take reps away from Melvin, and Melvin's trying to, you know, get that second contract, in that moment, in that game, he was the first guy there to talk to Ekeler about what ended up becoming a crucial fumble that to some degree cost them the game.
But Matt, do you think that's just innate in the players, or do you think that is stemmed from the leadership they have from the coaching staff and ownership?
I think it's coaching staff. I think it's Anthony. I think it's Coach Lynn for sure. He is a no BS guy, and everything is up front with him. And I think he's sort of created that culture in the locker room, which is I'm here for you. You tell me anything. You're not happy, you come to me. You're happy, share it. And you know, like I said, the first 5-6 weeks there, it got ugly. You know, and they were 0-4, and they're in LA, and there's, you know, 70% Eagles fans in their home stadium, and everybody's not, you know, upset. And I think that helped create a culture to some degree of kind of us against everyone.
Yeah.
So I think that, and I guess I'm giving you multiple answers here, right? So I think A, it was circumstance, moving from San Diego to LA. B, you know, not being welcomed immediately,
right,
you know, when you got here, and it was pretty adverse conditions for everybody. So that builds that whole us against the world sort of mentality, and see the fact that Anthony was willing to say, hey, if I'm not doing things right, come to me and let me know. And if I am, come to me and let me know so we can get this thing on track as soon as possible. And I think that helped create a pretty strong bond in the locker room with everyone.
Matt, last one for me here. Appreciate your time this morning, man. Hey, the Chargers are slated to draft 17th overall in the first round. What position group would you like to see them go after there?
I'd say probably linebacker. I think that's, you know, we knew that was probably the thinnest position coming into the season. Corey Toomer and Kyle Emanuel did great work, you know, as far as, you know, what they thought they were going to be asked to do versus what they really ended up having to do because of injury. Ja'Tavis Brown, for all of his tackles, he's a little small, and he kind of fell out of the rotation there late in the season, I think, because he got banged up because he was their leading tackler. So I think if they can get one of those bigger linebackers, Landry out of Boston College, I love Tremaine Edmonds out of Virginia Tech. I think that's probably the name. You know, everyone's excited about Roquan Smith, and they should be. The guy's going to end up probably being a top 10 pick. But I think if somehow I could just scoot past the combine and not let that guy get measured and get out on the field and run those drills, he might be there at 17, but I'm guessing he probably won't. But I got to believe that's probably the position group they're going to be looking at, because it's not a real deep corner safety year. You know, that was last year, which is why I was kind of surprised they went wide receiver when you had all those corners and safeties available up top. So that, if I had to guess, if I had to bet, that'd probably be where I think they'll lean.
And how much could a linebacker like that help ease things up and create even more opportunities for Bosa and Ingram off the edge?
Yeah, a ton, Andrew. I mean, I think that's, you know, it's Joey Bosa was their second leading tackler. You know, I mean, you think about a defensive end that piles up 12 sacks in a season, the number of hits, the number of pressures, yet at the same time he recognized because their linebacking core was depleted, he also had to be a little bit more responsible in his assignments, especially in the run game. And I think freeing him up, as terrifying as that may be for the rest of the league, to kind of pin his ears back and get after it a little bit harder, as opposed to, especially second half of the season, you really saw him have to dial that back to kind of help out as far as run support goes. I think that's where you could really see it affect. You know, you get someone like that who's a tackling machine in the linebacker level, at least with some size, you know, you can see it affect every level of the defense, right? Now the defensive line can get after a little bit harder, knowing the linebackers are there, and now you've got even more pressure on a quarterback for two standout, you know, if Barrett comes back, two Pro Bowl corners to do what they do. So I feel like that, you know, one position, if you can get someone as good as advertised, as you hope they are when you're picking that high, could really affect every level of the defense.
Really quick, who is your favorite quarterback in this draft?
Oh, Sam Darnold. I'm a big Darnold guy. I believe in, you know, and it probably has something to do with, you know, where I live and having watched him play in high school. And I just love guys. He's not one of these quarterback coach since age 11, independent guy, you know, goes to the big, you know, Trinity League, which is what our big league is out here. And I say that as my daughter's in the Trinity League, but he went to the public high school, won the championship at the public high school, was a standout basketball player at the public high school, blue collar family, teammates absolutely love him. And he's built like, you know, he's built like Phillip Rivers, you know, he's 6'4" and thick. So that would be my guy.
Okay. Great. Hey, Matt, really strong interview, man. Thank you so much, man.
Thanks, Matt.
Absolutely, guys. Anytime.
All right, man.
My pleasure.
Thanks to Matt Moneysmith for joining us to talk about all things Chargers. And before we go on to this weekend's playoff matchups, James Palmer of NFL Network dropped by via phone. He's covering Falcons-Eagles, but he joined us on First and 10 at 10 on Friday morning to talk about all the playoff matchups. So give that a listen.
We're going to head out to the hotline and bring on a friend of the program, James Palmer from NFL Network. Does a wonderful job for them. And always very nice to share that room, that closet we get to share down at Dove Valley. James Palmer, you're on with Ryan Edwards, Andrew Mason, Steve Atwater again. Hey, how are you, man?
Hey, James.
I'm good, guys, but you might want to elaborate a little bit on sharing that closet down at Dove Valley. It's a little vague.
It's a broadcast.
Might want to let everybody know kind of exactly what the situation is.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
I'm making the wrong idea.
Yeah, I kind of glossed over that. But, yeah, no, the Broncos have carved out a broadcast closet for basically all the media to share. And look, we all share nicely, but literally, you know, a little peek behind the curtain, you know, James is in there. He's working. He's got a TV monitor in front of him. He's got a camera in front of him. He's got the screen behind him. And then right next to him is our rack there with our mixer that we use to do all our sound from all of Dove Valley.
Right.
So we're in and out of there. And he sometimes, I don't know how he stays focused. So I'm always impressed by that.
I think it takes a real pro to work with you guys while I'm in there. You know, I really stay focused on the task at hand, even though you guys are mixing things on the sides.
I know.
You
know,
you're talking about the small room?
Art of professionalism.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, it is the art of professional, no question about it. All right, James, now I understand you're out in Philadelphia, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right.
In the homeland right now, born and raised.
That's right. So let's talk a little bit about that game. The way it's amazing how the Eagles were arguably the most complete team throughout the entire season. You change the quarterback, and again, that shows the value of the quarterback, and all of a sudden they're a home underdog as the number one overall seed. What's the buzz around Nick Foles and the expectations of this game? How has the team been talking about him? And then really that criticism, making them an underdog because of one guy.
Yeah, being around that locker room the last couple of days, trust me, those guys know that they're underdogs. They have an obvious chip on their shoulder because of this. You know, Lane Johnson, their right tackle, who might be in my mind, is probably the best right tackle in football. And you know, he said that he's been looking at it, and he's pissed off by it. And I think a lot of the guys in the locker room are upset by it because they feel like going 13-3, you said one of the most complete teams they are. I think if they had Carson Wentz right now going into this game, you're not thinking they win this game. You're thinking the Eagles are going to get have a pretty good shot at getting to the Super Bowl and potentially winning it. And so things have obviously changed. I think the rest of the team is kind of taking offense to what, you know, has being said, but the most people around the national consensus picking the Falcons to win this game. And obviously it's going to fall on Nick Foles. But I think at the same time, I think they're going to run the football well. I think they're going to want to focus on the run. In my opinion, I think they've really eased back on Jay Ajayi the last several weeks to really let him get unleashed in this game. And I wouldn't be surprised if this was really run heavy defense. And you know, they want Nick Foles to take some shots, but obviously I think if they're in a situation to where it comes down to him and winning and losing this game, that's really not the situation they want to be in. I would think running the ball, and if this game's played in the teens, I think the Eagles got a pretty good shot.
What, if anything, can Nick Foles draw from the fact that he has started a playoff game before, even though he didn't win? It was against New Orleans, a close loss back in January of 2014.
I think you can look at what he's done in a couple of things, Mace. Like, he's had tremendous success in this league in the past. I mean, you look back to that 2013 season that statistically was out of this world under Chip Kelly. And he draws, speaking with him, he draws on, you know, that he has had success in this league. And secondly, it's against this defense. He's had success against this cover three style defense that kind of started in Seattle. And, you know, Dan Quinn had it. They played against it with Gus Bradley, with the Chargers. And I think he's comfortable going against this style of defense. I think that also draws on to a little bit. And I will say this, he's pretty well-liked in Philadelphia. I mean, people don't forget what he did, you know, out of nowhere for Chip Kelly in a year that they didn't think they'd be all that good. And so I think it being here in Philadelphia helps him as well.
James, can the Eagles stop Julio Jones?
Well, I don't think they can. And I think when you listen, you know, Julio Jones last year when the Falcons played the Eagles, he had 10 catches for 135 yards. Yet at the same time, the Falcons only scored 15 points. That was their season low, and they were the number one team in scoring. You know, we went to the Super Bowl, and we obviously know what happened. So this week, defense coordinator Jim Schwartz says, we don't care if Julio Jones has 350 yards and we win the game. Then we did something right. But if he has 10 yards and the game-winning touchdown, well, then we didn't do enough to win the game. I don't think they care how badly he hurts them, in a sense to where if it plays into winning the football game, if they can control him in some sort of manner, I think that's kind of way they're looking at it. He'll get yards. They know that'll happen. But can they keep him out of the end zone? Can they keep this entirely, I think, really talented team? Sanu is a good is a great number two. They have two great backs. I think they have to worry about everybody, and if they focus too much on Julio, I think that might actually spell some problems.
We're chatting with James Palmer from NFL Network. You can find him on Twitter at JamesPalmerTV. Let's move to a couple other games. I just want to kind of ask your general opinion of these other games. The Titans are going to be coming in with a lot of momentum. There's nobody really picking the Titans. Maybe some people picking them to cover if you're going to go into that. Right now, the New England's favored by 13.5 at home. But at the same time, is there something to be said about a team playing with momentum? Even at this time of year, we've seen it far too often that a team, if they can somehow get to Tom Brady, that defensive front has had some abilities to shut down the run. If they can somehow get to Tom Brady, I mean, is there a path in your estimation at all? Because we're talking to gamblers right now, that the Titans could win this game.
Yeah, well, I don't think it's really momentum. I think it's a lot more that the mentality out of Tennessee that I've been told is that they really feel like they have nothing to lose. Mm-hmm. Nobody's picking them. You know, nobody thinks they have a shot, and that's kind of the mentality they're going to go in. They're going to do everything that they can throw at Tom Brady, because why not? And I think that's kind of the mentality that they have in this sense. We saw what Marcus Mariota could do with his legs against the Chiefs. I was at that game. And their mentality was kind of similar to what the Eagles did with Jay Ajayi. They were really limiting him and what he was doing with his legs the second half of the season and the last couple of weeks. And in the playoffs, they really wanted him to go out there and really use his legs as much as he can. Hopefully that can be an aspect. But I think defensively, it's just, I think, I mentioned Philly as a home field advantage. Nothing is like Foxborough. I've covered a lot of playoff games there. And it's just, you go in down 7 to start the game. And that's kind of the way Foxborough is. But if they can get after Brady, it's obviously pressure. But at the same time, if you can't cover and if you can't, you know, you can't get to him quick enough, he's going to pick you apart. I just think it's the idea that we have nothing to lose. Let's go. If they can find a way to get, you know, a turnover, something, points early, and they can ride Derrick Henry the way that you saw him go against the Chiefs, maybe they can run the football and eat the clock and try to do something in that manner. But it's going to be tough.
To go on to the Jaguars Steelers now, how capable is Jacksonville of replicating what they did against Pittsburgh earlier this year? I mean, they cause a lot of matchup problems, especially with the fact that they can go man for man against Pittsburgh's receivers. But the other key to that was the fact that Fournette could complement that on the offensive side with the ability to pound at the Steelers defensively. And yet he hasn't been the same Fournette since midseason.
Yeah, I think obviously Fournette's a huge part of this. And then the pressure they get up front with Malik Jackson, Calais Campbell, and then on the backside, obviously you have, sorry to say this in Denver, but the best cornerback duo in the NFL. But this whole game falls on Blake Bortles. And I think, to me, this matchup really is very similar to last year when the Houston Texans went into Foxborough, and that defense that was playing so good, and Romeo Crennel and Mike Vrabel drawing up such a brilliant game plan to attack through the middle and a weakness in center David Andrews for the Patriots with Whitney Mercilus and Jadeveon Clowney and hit Brady repeatedly. If Brock Osweiler doesn't go out there and just lay a giant egg and plays terrible, throws two picks, they win that game. And I think that's very similar to this situation. If they have a very good chance of winning this game, if Blake Bortles doesn't go out there and lay an egg, I think it's almost an exact scenario as the Texans to last year, to where your quarterback, with everybody else playing at such a high level in a game that you shouldn't win, your quarterback goes out and lost the game for you. I think that's what we're going to look at in this game if Blake Bortles wins or loses this game. And I don't really would say actually wins. If he plays well enough to not lose the game, the Jags can easily win this.
Yeah. Now, I just read an article on NFL.com about Le'Veon Bell saying that he's not playing under the franchise tag next year. He may sit out the season. Is that a distraction right now?
You know, I think he sent out a tweet after that a little bit. And I think everybody
saw that.
Like, man, this is what you should have said in the first place.
Right, right. Well said.
I think that's probably the way the thing should have went down. I mean, I think a lot of these guys, I wouldn't be answering the question about money, about next season in a week during the playoffs. If I do know one thing in that locker room, I think that probably got nipped in the bud pretty quickly. And when you have guys that have been around so long like Ben, I just think when the game kicks off, I don't think there's any issue with it.
Yeah. Last question for you here, James. Appreciate the time. Again, James Palmer, NFL Network. The Vikings-Saints maybe setting up to be one of the best games of the weekend. Vikings are favored at home. Saints have looked, I mean, with the addition of a couple of really, really good draft picks, they've looked like probably the best team in the NFL, at least to me. I got the Saints in this one. You want to tell me I'm crazy?
No, you're not crazy at all because it's inside. I don't think there's any home field. We're talking about home field advantage in a lot of these games, Foxborough, Philadelphia. I really don't think Minnesota has any sense of a home field advantage since they're playing indoors and Drew Brees loves to play indoors. And when you go out and on, and just, you know, just ask me point blank, who you got in this game, Drew Brees or Case Keenum?
Right.
Case has had a great season, and I think he's played really well. I covered him as a beat reporter when he was cutting his teeth in the beginning of his NFL career down in Houston. He's a football junkie, the gym rat. You can say all of those things. He's a scrapper. He can make all the throws, I can say. But if you go against Drew Brees and that comparison of experience, and again, I'll say it, it's inside. The Saints love to play fast. Mm-hmm. I do really want to enjoy watching this game of this Saints offense against this Vikings defense that I love. But I just think they can hit you on all three levels. They're too versatile. I think the Saints are going to go in and win this game. And the other underlying factor of this, and it's not brought up a whole bunch, and it's probably not brought up within the Vikings a whole bunch either, but no team has ever played a Super Bowl in their home stadium. And the Vikings are looking to think that, you know, we have a chance of that this year. That's a little underlying pressure.
Yeah.
This, man, we could play a Super Bowl in our home stadium. How amazing would that be? I'm not saying that affects the game a whole bunch, but it's kind of something that, you know, is in the back of your mind.
That's a good point.
During all this time for the playoffs.
Yeah.
And the other thing that's kind of hanging over the Vikings is quarterback. if they do win Sunday, what can that do for Case Keenum? And might they be inclined to potentially franchise him or try to get a deal done if he can prove he can win for them in the playoffs?
100%. I mean, and you know, I love the story. I like Case a lot as a person. He's been through a ton. He's been written off multiple times, college as well, even though he has unbelievable college stats. I just think, you know, if he can go out and he beats Drew Brees, man, I'm not saying I wasn't a believer before, but I think that's going to put a little proof in there. I mean, they're a talented team, and he knows how to run it. And I think we've seen that throughout this season. And I think it's going to make people have a lot of questions around the league about what's Case Keenum's future if he goes out and beats the Saints. I think just beating the Saints changes that.
I completely agree. James, we really appreciate the time, man.
Yeah, man. Thanks, James.
Thank
Always
you so
great,
much.
Man.
Enjoy your time in your homeland, and we'll see you around Dove Valley here very soon.
See you soon.
Thanks,
no
man.
Problem, guys. Cheesesteaks, here I come.
Thanks to James Palmer. Thanks to Matt Money Smith. Thanks to Ryan Edwards, Steve Atwater, and Andy Lindahl. And thanks to you for listening. We'll talk to you next week. We'll have plenty of conversation from the East-West Shrine Game. I'll be there along with Ryan and Steve. We'll be covering it all week. So give that a listen on Orange and Blue 760. Watch our coverage on DenverBroncos.com. Austin Brink of Broncos TV will be behind the camera producing everything. So plenty to come on the website on Orange and Blue 760. We'll be there. Hope you'll be there with us too. Take care, and thanks for listening.